Life's Learning Curve, episode 38.
Hi again, everybody. I'm Paul Hart, and welcome to Life's Learning Curve, the podcast. Today's podcast episode, The Milt Shuffle, holds up beautifully with our show's purpose in every way. So today's podcast subtitle probably should be something like, "It's a nice day outside. Why don't you go outside and enjoy it?" Have you ever been told that?
Many times.
I was told that a lot by my mother, usually. She wanted me to get off my rear end and get outside and get some sun or creative play or just get out and move around, get away from the TV at the time. Remember that phrase, because it's going to be coming back often in this podcast. Here at Life's Learning Curve Podcast, we like to take a look back at how our lives have changed and evolved, and we discover how we became the best version of ourselves. So let's go. Sebastian. Life's Learning Curve. I'm Paul Hart. Episode, The Milt Shuffle. Stand by. Today's story is one of a true place. A more innocent time in our history, right around 1967. I was a young boy around age 10. I was trying my best to discover just what was inside this magical-seeming, rusted, padlocked fence in my neighborhood, just a short two blocks from my home. My friends and I walked there weekly, or at least we passed it, just to peer through what we could see through the dense fencing that surrounded a multi-mile perimeter with a lot of fence that you really couldn't see through. It was mostly outdoors. We saw glimpses of bright, lush fields of tidy mowed grass and trimmed bushes, no big house or anything in there. And we smelled the freshly cut grass. Somebody was always mowing in there. We heard the serenity of the birds. It was quiet. We heard locusts of the summer buzzing away. And maybe we spied a running track in there somewhere. It looked like a track, but we weren't sure. But there wasn't much else besides that. So why was this blocked off so we couldn't get into it? Was it city property? Was it private property? Kind of looked like city property. I don't know. What was in there? It looked like an ideal place for some perfect society to live, to exist. It just looked beautiful, a utopia of kinds. To be honest with you, there were times my friends boosted the other guy up to jump the fence to get in. So we did get in by going over the fence, but only to have a caretaker come after us. Now, interesting. You know, you think caretaker, he's going to come after you. Oh, you guys get out of here. No. He was a guy who lived on the premises, and I believe his name was Ducky Drake. Now, Ducky being a nickname, of course.
Now, no more breaking
he
in,
was
okay?
A kind guy. He wasn't a mean guy. He was a kind guy. So we often just said, "You can't be in here, boys," kind of nicely, and he escorted us back out again.
Okay.
Now, many years later, upon his death, they named the field after him. So now today it's called Drake Field. However, back on that hot Midwest 1967 summer day, the field was finally unpadlocked by the city and opened as a park in my neighborhood. My friends and I all wandered in that day to the park. We passed the rusted gates that hadn't been opened for a long time, and we entered the field area like we were seeing, you know, East Berlin or something for the first time in many years. The regular hours, we were told, would be sunrise to sunset. That's perfect for us because that's our regular hours as kids. Sunrise to sunset. Sunset had to be home. If you weren't home, you heard your name being called down the street, or a whistle, or a pan being rung out to come home. And we decided that we would make the best out of this newly reopened park. We'd been looking at it through the fence for years. After two or three steps inside, we just stood there silent, finally, my friend Paul said,
"Look at all the space to run and play and stuff. 7 acres.
There's a gazebo and restaurants.
4 football-sized fields. Wow.
Great." Now, this park was ours. We could finally get in and use it, along with the nearby community. All of us. It was the neighborhoods. It was the towns. It was known formerly as Old Maroon Field, named after the former high school team that used to play their home games there. A new stadium had been built, and that was called Memorial Field. So this was Old Maroon Field. But I looked this up, and through research and our good friend the internet, I can tell you what it used to be.
From 1910 to 1917, there was a big car race in Elgin, Illinois. Thousands of people came to watch drivers zoom down Elgin roads. A lot of the route was on dirt and oiled graveled roads. Each lap was 8 miles, and the cars did 36 laps for a total of 300 miles. Not too long after cars were invented, people wanted to see how fast they could go. Car races became popular and were fun for families to watch. In 1910, Elgin held its first race. Drivers came from all over the country to try and win the big prize, $1,000 and a silver trophy donated by the Elgin National Watch Company.
After that, the field was used for sports, you know, in the 20s and 30s, 40s, and family picnics, and it was just a nice recreational park until it was gated and locked up somewhere in the 1950s. But back in that summer of 1967, I was hanging around with my creek friend, Jeff. Jeff always had ideas for making the most fun out of a day in the summer. That's a valuable person to have around if you think about it. I can remember Jeff saying to me,
"Hey, Paul, I've got an idea, and we can use the new field, too." "What?"
I asked.
"Let's buy some kites at the drugstore down the street, and we can finally have a place to fly kites. We didn't have anything before like this." "What drugstore?"
I asked.
"Oh, Burns Pharmacy down on the corner. They sell kites there. Didn't you know?"
Thus began the year of my life I'll just call the Kite Years. The drugstore was named Burns Pharmacy. The proprietor, pharmacist, patriarch, Milt Burns.
Yeah,
pharmacist,
that's me.
Of course. Milt's son, Freddie Burns, was also a pharmacist. White shirts, black bow ties.
That's me.
Also, store helper and manager, Wayne. Also, there was kind of an ever-changing soda fountain girl, sometimes a guy. They didn't hang around too long. I had a friend that was there for quite a few years, but sometimes they were in and out. Now, back at the soda fountain, Burns malts, which would be a milkshake with a little bit of malt put in there, were 35 cents for a malt in a tin with a very high dairy fat ice cream that tasted, it tasted like heaven. 5 scoops of ice cream, generous scoops, some malt from the dispenser that dispensed malt powder, a splash or two of milk, and it was firmly shoved up into a mixer. Hard to get push it up into that mixer because of all that ice cream, which whirred and buzzed for about 3 minutes, and occasionally they'd pull the tin down and mix it up a little bit by hand, and then they'd put it up again, and it would buzz away. A lot of ice cream was used to achieve that clumpy thickness. Nice. And I recall that as a child, I could not finish that malt. And if I did, I did not eat for hours and hours, maybe not until the next day. I shared the Burns Pharmacy soda fountain with a lot of friends from near, from far, away, throughout my life. The word got out, and it wasn't long before people were talking about the amazing malts at Burns Pharmacy. Athletes came in, couples on dates, families, and anyone would just stop by if they were passing by for that one-of-a-kind chocolate malt, also vanilla, also strawberry. The soda fountain girl also made Coca-Colas by hand, something they don't do very many places anymore. I would watch her. She would take a glass, probably an 8-ounce glass, maybe a 10, I don't know, 8-ounce glass, and she would put 2 squirts of Coke syrup, small chips of ice, and soda water from her pull-down tap. Kind of like the way they dispense beer, but when you pull this down a little bit, soda water came out. Next, she would stir all this up with a clean metal spoon about 3 or 4 or 5 clicks. Click, 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 click. You could hear when she stirred it up. And then she'd serve it on the counter and hand you a straw. Oh, delicious. And is it like today's Coca-Cola in a can? Similar. But this was better. It just was. 10 cents for that Coke. 12 cents for a large, which came in a taller glass. Now, within the drugstore, there was also a lot of other things, pharmaceuticals, and this huge area that had candy bars laid out. You could buy a candy bar for 10 cents. Comic book section that you can go and peruse the comic books. Everything was kind of 10 cents back then, maybe 12. But they had a lot of things. It was a pharmacy. It was a drugstore. What was ironic is that the owner, Milt Burns, never, ever seemed as if he wanted that soda fountain at all.
Don't care for it.
He detested anyone who lingered in his drugstore. Yet, he filled the store with comic books, hot peanuts, spun in a clean, white, glassed window display case, all kinds of candy, and right by the door, there were 3 separate boxes full of kites and kite string. Throughout my life, going to Burns Pharmacy, probably from ages 5 to age 22, Milt seemed to despise and hate his own moneymaker, the thing that brought the people in, the soda fountain. I don't think he ever considered that it was the soda fountain and the malts that kept so many, many people coming in for all the other sundries, prescriptions, everything else. Hey, people drove from faraway cities just to come to Burns to experience the malts alone. My friends and I feared Milt might shut down that soda fountain, and someday we'd just walk in and it wouldn't be there anymore. No soda fountain. However, I'm not going to let that linger. It never happened. People kept coming in to get their last Burns malt.
Hey, this could be our last malt here. I know.
So maybe Milt did have some crazy good business skills after all. There's some psychology in that. If you keep talking about how something may close, more people start coming in and filling the place up, and I believe that might be what happened here. Sly as a fox, maybe. Milt had this high and very throaty, thick voice, and when he spoke, it was very loud. It was always loud. He talked loudly, but I'm not sure he knew he was talking so awfully loudly. And he would be speaking across the store, which wasn't that big, with his son Freddie, or he was speaking to quiet and dry Wayne, who also was an assistant there. Often while sipping a homemade Coca-Cola at the soda fountain, I'd hear Milt call out to Freddie. Milt would say,
"Yeah, that soda fountain really brings in the business, but you know what? I could do without it."
Freddie's voice was much like his father's, but just slightly lower.
"Yeah, Dad, me too. People come in, they go out, they come in and go out all day. Well, it wouldn't be such a problem, Dad, if you just made the decision to shut it down."
Now, I sat there quietly saying nothing but listening. These weren't guys you could just chime in and talk to. They were kind of in their own conversations, kind of in their own pharmacy world. They always talked one-on-one to each other, as if the customers might not even be there. I sat there thinking, and I began to worry. You know, life has enough worries. I'm worried about a pharmacy soda fountain here. This could be my last time at this very unique soda fountain. Milton Freddy's lack of personal one-on-one customer skills were thin to none at all. Now, here's an example. At times, my mom would send me on my bike when I was age 10 to Burns to pick up a prescription when she was not feeling well. The doctor had phoned in a prescription. As you entered, a friendly ding would ring above the entry door. And the smell when you walked in was of, it was this mixture. It was like candy, chocolate, hot roasted peanuts, and this pharmaceutical smell that I can't describe. But you put all that together, and it's a synthesis of like olfactory awareness. You knew where you were when you walked in. If I smelled that smell today, I would know I was standing in Burns Pharmacy. So all this was Burns Pharmacy, and it made my mouth water every time I entered. Back then, this was a time where we had community drugstores, community places, community restaurants, and we all knew one another. Milt, Freddie, and Wayne, they all knew my family, and they knew me, called me by name.
Hey, hi, Pa. How's your day, Pa?
Welcome.
When I was there for my mom, Freddie said,
Hey, Pa, did you know that your Uncle Peter, used to live in the upstairs apartment when he first came to town? I don't know, somewhere around, I had a good 1950.
No, I wasn't born yet. I was kind of a quiet kid, so... Freddie continued.
Oh, yeah, he and his new bride lived there for like 3 years. Never laid on rent. Yeah, I remember. Her name was Jean.
Jan. Aunt Jan, I corrected.
Nope, never laid on rent,
chimed in Milt.
Is he still married?
Freddie said. Yes, I said, Aunt Jan. Said Milt. Milt would just smile and walk away. This was all confusing for 10-year-old me. So, if my mom called Milt, he'd allow me to pick up my mom's prescription. You could do that back then. Next, Wayne asked if he could help me.
Sure,
10-year-old me. Wayne was the guy who was dry, he was quiet, he smirked every once in a while, and if you got any real big response out of Wayne, you felt like you'd gotten a bonus of some kind for just walking in and making Wayne entertained. I liked Wayne because he was never pushy, or he didn't push me out of the store or anything like that, but he just listened, took care of things. I remember saying to Wayne, I'm here to pick up a prescription for my mom. Wayne slowly hovered over to Milt behind the pharmacist counter to get my mom's prescription. As he returned and placed it in a small brown paper bag, I paid for the pills. From behind the high-windowed pharmacist counter, Milt contributed.
Oh, Paul, hey, so your mom's got diarrhea again, huh?
I really don't know.
Hey, Paul, did you know that your uncle and his new wife,
Jan,
used to live upstairs apartment when he first came to town around, I don't know, 1950?
Yeah. Now I was a quiet and an embarrassed 10-year-old kid. Freddie then said,
Never laid on rent.
Milt replied,
How about that? Has your mom tried to cork? Diarrhea!
Milt just laughed a few more times and turned his back and continued to work. As for me, I grabbed that bag and I exited immediately.
Man.
And ding went the bell as I exited the door. I was on my bike in seconds, and it wasn't too long before I was safe back at home. Leaving the Cokes, the comic books that I'd wanted to look at, and candy bars all behind.
Go, 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 go.
Now, usually Milt did not like solo kids in his store. He had probably been, I don't know, shoplifted by kids. But at that time, that never entered my mind. When my friends and I were perusing through the latest Batman comic books in the comic books part of the drugstore, Milt stealthily would always, and I mean always, I don't know how he did this so quietly, he would come up right behind us as we looked at the comic books, less than a foot away, and loudly boom.
It's a nice day outside, boys. I think you should go out there and enjoy the nice day.
Then he'd get right behind us and he'd kind of usher us outside. But once outside, we were curious why Milt didn't want us in the store to buy from him. I still don't know to this day why he did this.
Candy baller.
But we began to call it the, quote, the Milt Shuffle. The kites. Jeff and I must have purchased 12 or so kites from Burns Pharmacy that summer. And when I came in, Milt would say something to the effect of,
"How's your mom feeling, Paul?"
Milt would bellow each time I went in there.
"Yeah, that diarrhea is a tricky business, I know that."
Then Wayne would say in a super quiet voice,
"Yeah, did you know that your uncle and his new wife, Jan, lived upstairs here once?"
Yes. He paid you guys always on time, and he's still married, in case you're wondering.
How about that?
Milt just smiled and walked away. So, our 10-cent kites took us a day to carefully assemble at first. Then we got pretty good at them when we started to build others. And they were so light, and they were so paper delicate that when we flew them, we would only run a few steps at Old Maroon Field, and up it launched. I remember as I pulled on the kite string, tighter and tighter, higher and higher as I pulled on the string, the kite ascended more and more. This was exciting stuff for back then. It really was. I was 10 and my kite's going up. It's great. The wind and minimal skill on Jeff's and my part had our paper kites high up in the sky. That was when I learned that anything that went up so easily can also come down at the same speed or faster. So smashing our paper kites beyond repair, the wind did that, we lost 10 cent kites that summer, a lot. I must have crashed 30 kites that summer. Now that's $3 worth. Each time getting the old Milt Shuffle from Burns Pharmacy.
It's a nice day outside, boys. Why don't you go outside and enjoy it?
Nearby trees ate about a third of these kites, and the rest suddenly were victims of the winds and were thrown to the hard, cindered ground right on the bed of the old racetrack. At speeds probably most cars never reached back in the day. Jeff and I also purchased from Burns a plastic kite for 25 cents, which we soon discovered did not go up easily. Probably because of the weight of the plastic, they definitely were a heavier kite. I only bought one of these kites. It was red, I still remember it, in the closet, and I never successfully launched it. So it sat in storage for a year before my mom, who was not a saver, I should say, in any kind of way, asked me,
"What's this? It's a kite. Why is it here? It won't fly. Why are you saving a kite that won't even go up?"
She had made her point. Out went the kite in the trash. But finally we found the perfect kite at Burns Pharmacy before we got the Milt Shuffle.
It's a nice day outside, boys. Why don't you go outside and enjoy it?
It was called a box kite, made of paper. It was $1. Didn't buy very many of these because it was a dollar. It easily ascended with absolutely no effort at all, and the wind gently guided this box kite up to a fun and reasonable height. We flew the box kites for hours. Now, I knew why. These kites were a dollar and not 10 cents. It was because they actually worked. They actually flew almost immediately. And for the remainder of the summer of 1967, Jeff and I flew our reliable box kites. Down the road, as I entered high school and then college, I kind of felt my childhood was left back at Old Maroon Field. And I had that feeling that somehow I'd outgrown the field. It's a strange feeling when you're a kid. But this feeling often came back that I needed to go see it. So I returned, sometimes just to stand there and remember the summers that Jeff and I had kites. We had no cares and we had no worries. It was just us and the wind. However, I did continue to visit Burns Pharmacy. By that time, Freddie's dad, Milt, had passed away. Wayne and Freddie manned the store, and Freddie had learned from his father that customers were to be driven out. Enter the new and improved, the Freddie Shuffle.
It's a nice day outside, boys. Why don't you go outside and enjoy it?
Even the lure of candy, a soda fountain, and roasted hot peanuts in a white clean display case with a little window that you could see the peanuts in as they spun. Now, through word of mouth, the soda fountain was more popular than ever. And I'll tell you what, Freddie wanted no part in the soda fountain, just like his father. It burdened him somehow. I was continuing to bring in new generations of customers. They're in high school. You'd see people on dates. Their college friends were there stopping by because they'd heard of this. They're from out of town. Local people were still coming in. They were entertained by Freddie's intonation, his voice. It was almost like a skit comedy going on.
Yeah, this soda fountain, I think I'm pretty much going to close it down pretty soon. It makes us money, but I don't know. I just... There's a lot of people around.
When I graduated college, my dad asked me if I'd like to go out to dinner or have the family over for a meal, something. And I said, no. Dad, you know what I'd really like to do? Dad, I'd like to go to Burns and have a malt again. It's been a few years since I've had one. And I'll tell you what, I've never had one better anyplace else. My dad said, Burns it is. So my father and I returned to Burns Pharmacy, this time by car.
This is gonna be great, Dad.
Got out of the parking lot. And
thanks.
We would get malts to celebrate.
That's what I wanted.
After getting out of the car, I knew that smell would hit me once again, that unique blend of candy, chocolate, peanuts, and pharmaceuticals. When we got to the door, we saw a sign on the door, out of business. Apparently, Freddie had finally given himself the time to spend the time outdoors. Something he was always telling us to do. It's a nice day outside. You should go out and enjoy it. Well, Milt never got to do that. He worked his whole life. Freddie closed the store and retired. On the front window, there was another sign. Going outdoors, it said. I don't know if anybody else understood that, but I did. For years and years being sent outside. Now it was Freddie's turn.
It's a nice day outside, boys. Why don't you go outside and enjoy it?
Oh, yeah.
So what's our takeaway today? Things do not go on forever, so we might as well choose to hold them in our hearts as an experience to be remembered. And that's how I feel about that drugstore, Burns Pharmacy, loaded full of eccentric voices and personalities. They are a part of my growing up years, a part of my composite. These were the experiences and the people that so greatly influenced me, befriended me at times, and inspired me to continue on life's highway, occasionally taking that fork in the road less traveled. And my fork in the road, it took me to Burns Pharmacy for a Burns malt, the malt of a lifetime. As we wind up season two, it's been 24 months of our podcast.
2 years.
And I want to thank our listeners, the people that tune in each time. Please tell your friends. As for me, I know I continue to learn a lot as I do this, but not only about a podcast, but more and more about life's continuing learning curve, and I do love it. Please subscribe to us at lifeslearningcurve.org. We're already setting up some diverse guests and outlining episodes for next season. Season 3. We'll hit the ground running with that right away next month. So, for right now, enjoy your life and the learning curve that it offers. For Life's Learning Curve, I'm Paul Hart. Subscribe to Life's Learning Curve at lifeslearningcurve.org and leave a review on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or Podchaser. This Life's Learning Curve Season 2 finale was produced by Paul Hart, Technical Director Heidi Cerner, Supervising Producers Sebastian T. Dogg, Peter Anderson, and Jesse Letourneau. Some names and voices were changed for entertainment purposes. Our editor, Paul Richards, audio, as always, Riley Hart. On this episode, special thanks to the gang at Burns Pharmacy for creating masterful ice cream malts and unknowingly entertaining the masses. Find us at our website, lifeslearningcurve.org. Help us grow and continue by liking us on Facebook and listen to us wherever you're listening right now and practically everywhere else podcasts are heard these days. Today's episode 38, The Milk Shuffle. From all the crew here at The Late Late Shift, I'm Paul Hart, and we will be back soon with more from Life's Learning Curve.